everybody. Welcome to the Hallmarkies podcast. We are really excited today to be starting our Thanksgiving coverage. It is going to be pretty crazy. I think we have 6 recaps scheduled over this 10-day period, which is kind of nuts, but we're really looking forward to it. This is our first one that we're talking about, the first 2 films of this Thanksgiving period. And I'm film critic Rachel Wagner, and I have with me another film critic. So exciting to have Alonzo Giraldi here. And thank you so much, Alonzo, for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me. Yes, it is a big week ahead. So let's gotta hit them as they come up.
Yeah, get your green and red Gatorade going strong. this next period is going to be intense. But it's been a bit since you were last on our podcast. So we have some new listeners. Why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners if people are new?
I'm the film reviews editor at a website called The Wrap, and I host, 4 podcasts now. Linoleum Knife, we just celebrated our 10th anniversary. It's that I do with my husband, Dave White, and then also Breakfast All Day, Who Shot Ya, and A Film and a Movie, which just started up this summer, and we just had our 25th episode. And then for our purposes here, I am the author of the book called Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, which is a guide to holiday films, and it's pretty much focused mainly on theatrical movies. I think there's a couple of made-for-TV movies from the 70s in there, but I don't dig in too hard on. I hadn't really had my conversion moment yet to the Hallmark movies, but I'll be covering, or not really me, but I'm collaborating with the hosts of Deck the Hallmark on their book, which will be coming out in fall of 2021.
That's really exciting. Yeah. How long have you been actively watching these Hallmark films?
I want to say for about the last 4 or 5 years, probably. I always tell the story. My friend William Bibiani, who you've had on the show, was in a car accident. And he janked up his knee, spent all of November and December on the couch, and just sort of got sucked into the Hallmark vortex and started describing these movies to me. And I thought, okay, this sounds bizarre. I got to check this out. And suddenly I found myself in there as well. So, yeah, I would say probably starting about 2015, 2016. And then, it just became this thing where, it is the Pokemon of holiday movies, where you can't just watch one of them. You have to watch all of them.
That's right. Yeah. So how do you think that 2020 has stacked up compared to these other years?
Tell you, you can tell the difference. There's something going on over there. I don't know if it is the fact that Crown Media got a new CEO this year, and they're really trying to sort of actively shake out some of the cobwebs. I don't know if it's that, you recently hosted a discussion with the director and producer of Two Turtle Doves, which was my favorite movie from last year. And they talked about how, because of the pandemic this year, and Hallmark deciding early on, we're putting all of our eggs in the Christmas basket. We're not going to work so much on the summer movies and the fall movies. It's really, Christmas is our priority. So maybe that meant some of these scripts went through a somewhat more arduous development process. I don't know what the cause is, but I know the effect has been the movies seem smarter this year. The movies don't have the kind of contrived, I overheard a conversation and that means we're going to break up, stuff as much. And there hasn't been as, to the point where I think they're even kind of goofing on some of the tried and true cliches of these movies. I think in Royal Holiday, where, they have to move the location of the Christmas ball, and somebody says, well, what about the barn? And somebody says, the space eaters, it would be a fire hazard, just stuff like that, where it's somebody, these are inside jokes about what we're expecting these movies to do. I think overall it's been a pretty good year. What we'll be talking about maybe reflects that less, but generally speaking, I think so far 2020 is off on a good foot. What about you?
I agree. I don't know if it's just having those extra 2-3 months where there was that uncertainty, and so they're just working on scripts. I don't know. Or just tough times bring out the best in people. I don't know, but I agree. I mean, honestly, there isn't any that I haven't found any of them to be unwatchable.
But
last year they started with one that, in my opinion, was pretty unwatchable with Merry Christmas Match.
This is true. Yes.
That was terrible. And so usually they have one that as I joke on the podcast, takes me to a dark place that I hate.
We haven't had a cheerful Christmas yet this year.
No, we haven't had any like that. And you know, like I famously really, really don't like the Finding Father movies. There's different ones that just aren't for me. And so far this year, I don't know if it's also because I'm just a softie this year and just things.
We're all in a vulnerable place. That's yeah. But I know, I think you can point to things where you're like, okay, this is not a thing that we would have seen in 2019. Like, for example, the scene in The Christmas Bow where there's the flashback to the grandmother with dementia who was sort of brought out of her fugue state by hearing the granddaughter play the violin. Which is an actual medical thing. There's a really great documentary about it called Alive Inside that's on Amazon Prime. But, you know, like I think old Hallmark movies were like, oh, no, too sad, too illnessy. We're not going to do that. And now they're open to venturing out. And we're seeing it, you know, obviously in the diversity and the fact that we're getting interracial relationships that, you know, tonight we have a gay couple being prominently featured in Christmas House. But I think in a lot more subtle ways, a lot more granular ways, these movies feel like, hey, you know, yes, we have a formula, and yes, people tune in because they like the X, Y, and Z of these movies. But what if we, you know, tried to mix it up a little? What if we tried to be a little smarter? What if we tried to be a little, you know, let's challenge ourselves a little bit? And for the most part, I think I feel like that's what I'm seeing in this year's films.
Yeah, they're not like perfect movies by any means, but I don't know if the so far my least favorite is the Christmas Chalet.
Oh, okay. One.
And it wasn't that bad. It was fine.
It was very standard 2019.
Yeah. So, to be honest, I've been probably more disappointed with the Netflix lineup, and they've been okay, but maybe my expectations were just too high. For some of them, like, I don't know. They just feel like for the most part, their lineup has not been as good as I wanted it to be.
Well, I know you and I disagree on Holiday, but, I really admire Jingle Jangle. I mean, it's a bit much, but you know, like give me a bit much over not enough any day, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I gave it a fresh, so I liked it. Sure. I was hoping to love it. And so again, maybe my expectations were, the story was a little messy, but yeah, it's fun.
There are whole chunks you could take out and not really affect the plot, I think. But, but yeah, you know, I did just a looking at it and I thought the songs were nice. And yeah, you know, I'll be curious to see how the Netflix stuff plays out. I thought Princess Switch 2 was fine. I thought the Christmas Drop was fine. I think we're still embargoed from talking about Dolly Parton, so we'll talk about Dolly Parton later. I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting. It's incredible that they have so many movies. I mean, it's just unbelievable to me that Lifetime and Hallmark and it seems like Lifetime have more acquisitions than Hallmark, but just the fact that they somehow managed to, between the two of them, make over 70 movies is just, it's unbelievable.
No, absolutely. Given the year that we had, I really thought we were going to be getting a lot of like, oh, we're going to do this like a radio play or something. You know? They found a way to like forge through and do their thing. And it's like, you know, I think, and certainly like, and it's not like everybody else has figured this out. I mean, every day I'm reading about, you know, this TV production shut down for 2 weeks because of, you know, positive testing. Yeah. And, you know, obviously shooting in Canada is different than shooting in LA because Canada really got their act together in a more way than we did when it comes to this stuff. But yeah, I mean, there's really nothing else on TV right now that I think has the track record where these guys are like, nope, business as usual. We are giving you a season, and they're doing it.
figured it out. I mean, I think that we'll talk about it in Nashville Christmas Carols. The first one that I think noticeably was affected by COVID in the most way so far, mm-hmm. that I think because it was filmed in the States, that, you know, obviously things like the fact that the big finale is the rehearsal, that wouldn't be the case if without COVID.
Yeah, definitely. Although that was a movie that clearly was already going to be leaning so much on green screen for the special effects that I think, you know, they were able to kind of squeeze that one by, you know. But like the, I'm already forgetting, what's the Lifetime one where you did the Q&A with the director?
With A Twinkle All the Way?
No, yes.
For this year?
The one, because that was also shot in Nashville, and they pulled it off pretty well. The military one with Santa.
Oh, Welcome Home Christmas.
Yes, that one.
Yeah, same director.
Right, that's what I was trying to say. Like that one was also shot in Tennessee, and you know, like I didn't see the seams. Like it felt like there were crowds, and there needed to be crowds. You know.
Yeah, I liked that one. That one was pretty good.
Yeah, it was charming.
And there's one thing I was curious of your thoughts about. So it has been really nice having the escapism of these movies, mm-hmm. but also it's been a little bit hard because like some things like in Christmas Chalet that it's been a little bit hard for me sometimes to see things that were missing. Mm. I don't know if you felt any of that, like see the festivals, see people going out, see the concerts, the gatherings, other stuff like that. I felt like it's been sort of bittersweet.
I've been kind of half looking for that and sort of looking for like, okay, where this normally would have been, you know, 25 people and now it's 4. I'd say the first time that's really come up for me really is, and one of the ones we're going to talk about today with Feliz Navidad, it seemed like there were moments where I was like, this seems really sparse.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's just it's just at the same time that it's escapism to see these things in 2020, it's also kind of, oh, I miss that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, again, you know, I think so much of what makes the Hallmark movies effective is, you know, I always sort of jokingly say it's like it's a delivery system for, you know, tree lightings and cookie cutting and all of this kind of stuff that people may or may not get to actually do, you know, in the season. And I think that's so much why these movies are about going home and being with your family. And I think that really rings a bell for, you know, here's the thing. My husband's mom had a stroke years ago and was in a nursing home for a long time. And I think of the Hallmark movies as kind of being peak nursing home television. And I'm not saying that in a bad way, but I think that they do push a lot of buttons in that way. And so, yeah, in a year in which a lot of us are not going to get to spend the holidays with our family or, you know, do the kind of public celebrations that we might have in years past. I think we feel it more that we're not doing it, you know, but I think that for a lot of audiences, they often don't get to do that. And so that's a niche that these movies fill for them.
That's true. I think that was hard in Chateau Christmas that seeing them plan this concert and I just missed the arts so much.
Yeah.
I'm going to concerts so much. This is the first year that I won't go see Christmas Carol live. And that is, I mean, my whole life, my whole adult life, I've seen Christmas Carol live. And I technically could see it, but I'm not there yet going to theater in the round, live theater in the round. That's for sure. But I don't know. I just, it's hard. It's hard for me.
It is. And I think for me, it's been, honestly, I respect their decision to sort of pretend that this isn't happening in these movies because mm-hmm. in the stuff that I've been taking in that does acknowledge it, like I'm glad they're having that conversation, but at the same time, I get a little, you know, shaken by it. Like I feel like I'm one of the few people that watched that NBC series, Connecting, that was on, it was like a 7-episode show, and it's about a group of friends, you know, staying in touch with each other via Zoom, and it's all set during the pandemic. Like the beginning of each episode tells you exactly what day it is, you know, that we've been going through all this so far. And there's a Halloween episode where a character like has this speech about how, like, Halloween means a lot to me. We have these traditions. We do them every year. It's killing me that we can't do them and that,
yeah,
you know, that none of you guys even put on a costume for the Zoom call. And I felt it, you know, and I think that's just where we are this year. So I think in the way that these movies always kind of encourage you to sort of go with the fantasy Christmas that no one's having. I mean, like, these people all somehow have jobs and yet have time for a million different, you know, events and stuff. You know, I think this year more than ever, we just have to kind of like go with it and, yeah, and enjoy the fantasy.
Yeah, they did on Freeform. They did Love in the Time of Corona.
Right.
Which I actually liked. I when I heard about it, I was like, oh, that sounds so cringy. But I thought it was, I liked it. Again, I think I'm a softie this year when it comes to stuff like this. But
Believe me, I have never cried at more TV commercials in my life.
Yeah, that's right. Well, let's talk about Nashville Christmas Carol. Is our first movie for this weekend. So this stars Jesse Schramm and Wes Brown, mm-hmm, and a bunch of country music elites with Wynonna Judd, Kix Brooks, Sarah Evans, Raylene, and many more. So the summary on this one is, a television producer is forced to work with the man who broke her heart on a country music Christmas special while being interrupted by Christmas spirits determined for her to revisit her past. You and I did a whole episode of the podcast a couple of years ago about Christmas Carol and our favorite versions. Well, and particularly about female led versions of Christmas Carol. And we talked about the Hallmark version with Carrie Fisher.
Right.
It's Christmas Carol. And that's the as far as I can remember, that's the last time that Hallmark did Christmas Carol. And it hadn't really occurred to me that they hadn't done it in so long. That was 2012.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I suspect that maybe part of that has to do with the idea of, and I think there's a flaw we're going to get into with this movie. Yeah. I think that for Hallmark, the thought of doing a Christmas Carol means, oh, well, we have to create a Scrooge character, and Scrooge characters are really awful, and that's not the vibe we're going for here. And I think that might have been why they shied away from it for a long time. And then I think now with this version, the idea was, well, what if we did a Christmas Carol, but Scrooge was not a terrible person, but just maybe could use some improvement in a few minor areas.
Yeah. It's really interesting because she a not a Scrooge character, literally the Bob Cratchit type character in this version is begging to keep working for her. please
don't make me go to law school. Yeah, I want to be assistant forever.
Let me work for you. I guess overall, what were your overall thoughts about this one?
Oh man, this is my least favorite of the season so far.
Okay. Yeah.
I just felt like this movie hates women, for one thing. I mean, like, from the mom who abandons the family and is thus the fault of why the lead character is the way she is, to the fact that the lead character really doesn't do that much that's bad. I mean, like, we see her be charitable. We see her, in a lot of ways, she is a compassionate, very un-Scroogey person. She just can't forgive Wes Brown, who did kind of throw her under the bus, frankly. And so it just, the whole thing felt so pointless. Like, why, like if you're going to have dead people come back and show you your life and point out to you what you've done wrong, you need to have done more wrong, frankly.
Yeah. Congratulations. You worked really hard.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, so she's careerist and, you know, but still, like, you know, gives gifts to orphans. I'm like, but oh yeah, let's smack her down. This movie never explained its own existence to me. I found it all kind of ridiculous. And then, you know, along the way, like, yeah, there are some charming moments. The music is all fine, I think. You know, Wynonna Judd seems to be having a very good time. But like, oh my God, Kimberly Williams-Paisley, should have known better than that, like, dime store sugar baker accent that she's doing. Like, she's married to a country star. She knows this world, and she is doing this, like, cartoony, like, Blanche DuBois. I'm like, what are you even doing in that dress and with that accent? Stop.
I thought the dress was fine, but the accent was a little much. I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun enough, but I do feel like it was a missed opportunity.
They
had all the pieces to tell a traditional Christmas Carol story, and I don't understand why they didn't just do it. It reminds me of, I was talking to a writer, a friend of ours, and she had pitched some idea to Hallmark, and where there was going to be, I forget what it was exactly, but she was told Hallmark heroines are not allowed to do anything illegal ever. And they can lie, I guess, about like a fake fiance or, you know, something like you'll occasionally have, but that's about as deviant as they're going to get.
Then don't do a Christmas Carol, or like make the male protagonist flawed and have the women fix him or something. But yeah, this just, I remember when they showed the clip of this, even on the preview special, and it was just literally a clip of Jesse Schramm being a good producer and like pointing things out and fixing something. And I'm like, wait, she's the Scrooge in this? Like, what does she do? What does she do that's so bad? I mean, compare her to Bill Murray in Scrooge, who is also playing an awful TV person. Like, she caves on the let's take the candy billboard off the stage in 2 seconds. Like, if she's a really despicable, you know, like showbiz awful, you know, person, she would have really pushed for that, or like it would have been her idea, whatever. But no, this movie can't commit to what it even is.
Yeah, as mad as she gets, or as bad as she gets, is her getting frustrated about the cookies and the wet paint on
And she even says, "I'm sorry" at the end of that one. Like, that's not a good tantrum if you say "I'm sorry" at the end.
Yeah, the whole point of this movie is about about how she has decided she's not going to let her personal life get in the way of her business, and really she's just kind of not going to have a personal life. And I mean, if you compare it, I don't know if it was, I think it was 2018, they had on Lifetime, they had a version of Christmas Carol
with
Toni Braxton, which had its flaws, but the one thing I really liked about that, I thought it did really well, was that they decided in that version to have the ghost be her, like, the reason why she'd become bitter was that her parents had died in a horrible accident, and she had just kind of closed off because of it. And so the ghosts were her mother, or was the ghost. And I thought that was actually really effective. And every time she saw her mother, I felt it, you know, that how you would feel if you'd lost somebody in that kind of trauma and then seeing your mother again, that would be so upsetting.
Another moment that this movie kind of bobbles, you know, when she's seeing herself as a child and the mother appears, like, that should be a gut punch.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of like, oh, my mom.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, it's more her seeing her young self and young Gavin than seeing her mom. Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't really thought of that, but you're right that the sort of the emotional moment is when she sees her the next year, her sister getting the dollhouse and her not getting really any Christmas presents. What did you think about this relationship between her and her sister?
It was kind of one note. It was I sacrificed everything so you could have a better life. But like, I bought the bond between them, the sort of, oh, I'm the big sister, I get to tell you what to do. Like, that actually was probably the most successful depiction of a relationship in the movie, and that it felt genuine, you know. But, you know, and again, I think so much of this comes back to, like, let's demonize the mom for leaving. I, for one, would like to know maybe why she left. What was the dad like? You know, what was there's got to be more to that. It just and by skimming over it and by making this whole movie about, like, let's teach Jesse Schramm's character a lesson about letting go of the past, whatever this is all about, it just kind of felt like, you know, women, know your place. And, like, you know, be either, if you're a mom, stay at home. And if you're a working woman, like, defer to the man or forgive him when he, like, you know, undercuts your career options. I don't know. It just, all of that sat badly with me. But I did think, I like the sister relationship. You know, again, the sister having the secret boyfriend who is black is not something we would have seen on Hallmark 2019. That's definitely new and different. But, you know, even like it drives me crazy when movies that are written and created by people in show business get show business stuff so wrong because they don't think audiences can handle it. Like, the record exec would not tell her to Christmas party, oh yeah, we're not using you, we're going with an established director. He would have strung her along, fobbed her off on an assistant, promised to have a meeting with her that never happened. Like, you don't just say at a party, oh yeah, no, you're out of here, we're not using you, beat it. Like, that just doesn't happen.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And and as far as the, I guess I've known so many people who have gone to law school just because I was a political science major in college. And if you are not pretty committed to going to law school and becoming a lawyer, don't go to law school. That is a bad idea. I was on Twitter, I was saying, going to law school when you don't really want to is another way of wasting lots of money. I mean, that is just a terrible choice. Don't do it.
No question.
Because it's not like in the past where if you got a degree like that, there was a pretty, like, guaranteed career that you could have. Yeah. So it's like, okay, well, I'm going to do this. Now there's a lot of law graduates that are working at Target and things. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I mean, just to pay their student loans.
I don't know if you ever saw the "Don't Go to Law School" number from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, but it contains a great deal of wisdom.
Yeah. Yeah, don't go to law school unless you want to go to law school, then go for it. But I was just kind of like, oh, yeah, I would stay being the assistant too rather than.
I will give Nashville Christmas Carol this. Like, they were really trying to be ambitious with the special effects, and they were not terrible. The transitions from place to place, that kind of thing.
Well, I thought that all of the country music stars were super charming, and they all came and brought it. And I don't know, I really enjoyed Kix Brooks. He almost made me forget Home by Spring, which took a dark place. One of the worst Hallmark movies I've ever seen. I joked that's Hallmark's version of Get Out.
So much. He was pretty hammy, but I mean, like, you know, that's what you hire that guy to do in that role. So, you know, I'll allow it.
Are you, would you say that you are a country music fan or no? Not so much.
Not so much. I mean, I went to college in Nashville and I definitely, like, there's a period that I know pretty well, like the whole sort of like new traditionalist Dwight Yoakam, like early Katie Lang period that, you know, I was kind of paying attention to it. But, you know, I know the name Sarah Evans. I didn't really know her work before this. And I, you know, her stuff is fine. I liked the original Christmas song that begins and ends the film. The karaoke of Most Wonderful Time of the Year was fine. You know, and again, I think Winona Judd's maybe the best thing in this movie. So, you know, they use that aspect of it pretty well. And I can say this as somebody who has lived in Nashville, it never snows in December.
Oh, yeah.
January, February, maybe.
That you were talking about Feliz Navidad, and it was funny because I was like, oh, that's so nice. They didn't even worry about fake snow in this movie. Ho-ho. And then, oh my gosh. I was like, yikes. I spoke too soon.
Yep.
But yeah, and one thing I thought was interesting about this version of Christmas Carol is that I can't think of any other one where it flows from the fantasies to the real life so quickly. Like, most of the time it's like, oh, he's got to wake up, and then maybe you'll have some things, and then he'll have the second
yeah, that's
spirit.
True.
But this was like in and out, sometimes within a conversation.
Yeah, that is actually a new twist. You're right. I haven't really seen that before in another version where yes, it is Christmas present, and thus it is happening all around you. So now we're going to hop from this place to that place. And so you're right. That is actually it was a challenge, and they shook it up. But to have no Christmas future is like, that's, then why yeah. are we even here?
I mean, and famously, the Carrie Fisher version has only her. She's yes. the only ghost.
Discount Afterlife on that movie.
But, yeah.
We can have four Canadian ghosts, or we can have Carrie Fisher. Take your pick.
And I thought there were actually some nice moments in the script. Mm-hmm. That I liked it when Winona says, I'm more studied on yesterday's than tomorrow's. Mm. Or I can't remember if it's Kix or Winona. Any one of them said that. And I also liked I thought there was maybe like a wink to 2020 when she says, I kind of want to hug you or something. Is that a thing? I kind of like that. And Winona says, humans got more hearts than sense. Mm. And basically, Winona's kind of big Jacob Marley problem was just that she worked hard. That was the main, this is the bad man of business.
Yes.
Just in the sense of over, like, working too hard and not forgetting to fall in love.
Which kind of is an ongoing thing in movies that makes me crazy. Like, there are so many movies that are probably made by, you know, or greenlit by studio executives who spend a lot of time at the office that are about parents realizing that they're not, you know, going to all their kids' Little League games because they're spending too much time at work and isn't that terrible, and learning to, you know, they're going to do better. And it's like, what economy are we living in now? Like, everybody has two jobs at least,
yeah.
You know, especially if you have like kids to feed. And so, like, and then we're going to, on the rare occasion the parents get to go to the movies, they get a film that shames them for not going to more Little League games because they're spending time at the office. Yeah, they're spending time at the office so that kid can have a bat, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to get visited by three spirits yes. by watching, watching all these Hallmark movies for my job. I mean, it's, I mean, all of us are doing whatever we can right now to, I mean, if we're lucky if we do have a job right now.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're lucky if we can work hard and overwork.
And you know, so the idea that, yeah, Jacob Marley, you know, spent too much time at the office and didn't have a personal life. It's like, well, those are the chains you forged in life. And that, there's no stakes here at all. Uh-huh. You know,
yeah.
like this all basically hinges upon, are she and Wes Brown going to get back together? Not, are you going to ruin the lives of everyone around you and then spend eternity in torment, you know, like it's a slight yeah. different weight there.
She also, so she films this commercial for in the past mm-hmm. for this cookie company
Ms.
that she's
Marjorie.
Trying to help out. And I thought it was interesting. It was because this is now the second movie that Jesse Schramm has filmed a cookie commercial.
Right. I forgot about that.
That she's a director of a cookie commercial with a birthday wish, which is one of my favorites. I yeah. love that.
And that other one, they at least bothered to show her the future, which they couldn't do here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That in that one, if people haven't seen it, she gets this, I think it's very smart. She gets this quick little glimpse of her future of what it could be like with Luke McFarlane in a monkey hat.
Yes.
And that one I think is really good.
Not to be confused with Two Addicts Christmas, which is another movie in which somebody gets a glimpse at their future life.
Yeah. Yeah, that one is also all about a workaholic who is taught to not work so hard.
Exactly, that, yeah. Like, get your paying job to go pursue the arts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, become a photographer. That Hallmark loves photographers.
Oh, do they ever?
Favorite.
And they're never good. They're never good. You know, it's maybe spend a little bit of that budget on hiring someone to take some good pictures so that we'll think, yes, you should leave your job to become a photographer and not, oh, no, don't do that.
Right. Yeah. And so they find out that they have to change the order of the show. And this is a live show being put on Christmas Day.
Well, it's live to tape is what they say. So like they shoot it as a live thing, but then it airs later on the holiday.
On later that day, but it is being filmed on, isn't it being filmed on Christmas?
Maybe I got very lost on what the timeline of this film was, but they make it a point to talk early in the film about how it's live to tape.
Yeah. And so she's going to have to tell Belinda, about, that Alexis is the younger singer is taking over her first spot.
Yeah, another moment that makes zero sense in the terms of how like actual show business works. Because if you've got somebody who's like a big established star, they are not gonna sit down for that one, and they're certainly gonna have not just like their one handsome manager there to kind of go, oh, I guess that's what we got to do now. Like that, this is when the lawyers come out and like walkouts are threatened. Like guess that's what's gonna happen now.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I guess I can understand the new hot star, you know, getting the first spot, placement, but so late in the game, probably unlikely.
Also, if you have the hot star, you want to put them last because you want people to stay tuned to your 2-hour live
good
show.
Point. Yeah. Well, they end up, Sarah Evans and Raylene end up meeting up in the festival.
Christmas festival, yeah.
Yeah. And they sing and Rockin' Little Christmas. Mm. And that was fun. They did have more music than I was expecting, because sometimes, like for instance, Dollywood, you know, had no dollies.
Oh, that's singing. True. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or, you know, Mariah not singing in her own movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So I appreciated that. I did think that Wes and Jesse had pretty good chemistry. I think that Wes can have, he has pretty good chemistry with most of his partners.
He fireman's carried Kelly Pickler through 2 movies. So clearly he can do anything. yeah, they're fine. They read as a couple. Like you buy them together, and they seem well matched.
Yeah.
I just didn't.
It would have been kind of. I mean, I Jessie Schramm's a lot better actress than Kelly Pickler, of course. But
you
it would have been
much
kind. It would have been kind of fun if she had been able to be in this in some way. I feel like maybe
it would have made some sense, but frankly, if they never cast her again, I'm perfectly okay with that. I, you know, bless her heart, as we say.
It's the one she would have fit in at least.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it would have, I would buy her as a country music TV producer more than I would buy her as a Chicago investment banker. I'll say that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's another movie that as far as music, they sing Silent Night literally 9 times.
Yes. The one song, like, you know, there's a lot of Christmas music in the public domain. I don't know why it's always Silent Night with these, but
yeah.
At least nobody dances to Silent Night in this movie. It just always drives me crazy.
Yeah, and so Jesse Schramm ends up getting the job at the end, and she's able to commute and do the awards show.
That's another thing. It's like, okay, we're going to give you the job to produce this one award show, and that's going to require you to move to Los Angeles. No, that's not how that works either. It's not a big deal. They're going to let you stay in Nashville. That's a thing you can do.
There's airplanes. Those are a thing.
There's, you know, the internet, which Hallmark to this day continues to be eluded by.
Right. And so then I would think that they would have made a bigger deal of the fact that here she's having, through her business, she's having to kind of betray Belinda, and she's so mad and huffy at Gavin for betraying her, you know, that would be sort of more of a
mirror moment.
Yeah. But I don't know. It's interesting. So they end up, she shows him the video from when he was a little kid, right, saying that his best friend is Vivian.
And he remembers this clearly, like to the point where he says, "I thought you said we were out of tape." I'm like, okay. Who remembers this stuff from when you're 10 years old, except in a Hallmark movie where, you know, you pretty much the Hallmark universe exists not too far away from the Twilight universe in terms of like childhood imprinting. Like, you know,
if you
liked a boy when you were 8, dadgummit, you're going to be engaged to him by the end of this movie.
Yeah. So we do 1 to 5 in our course. They end up together at the end. It's very exciting. So we do 1 to 5 crowns on our scale. So what would you give this film?
I think like a 2. I'm that's purely for Winona. I think just so much of this movie is, it just feels poorly thought out, and just the elephant in the room is, why is this a Christmas Carol? You know, if you're not going to give me a Scrooge, don't do a Christmas Carol. And so, yeah, that's I'm not down for this.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 3.25. I had fun with it. I had fun watching it, but yeah, I agree. I think it's a missed opportunity. I really like Jesse and Wes are two of my favorites from Hallmark. So I think that went a long way. And I liked all of the country music stars. That was fun. But yeah, I think don't be so afraid to make your characters unlikable. I mean, it's okay.
Yeah,
they can have a growth. They can have an arc.
Take us on a journey, you know?
Yeah.
These movies love to reference It's a Wonderful Life, but they're so terrified of doing anything like what It's a Wonderful Life does in terms of where it takes the audience. It's like, yeah, let them be bad, and then when they become, when they're good, it means something, you know.
Yeah.
Hi everybody, I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Next up, we have Feliz Navidad. This is on the Lifetime channel, and this stars Mario Lopez and Annalyn McCord. And it is about David Morales, an Arizona high school principal and single dad, has lost the holiday spirit after also losing his wife a few years ago during the Christmas season. Now, David will do anything to avoid Christmas, so he moonlights as a delivery driver during the holidays. But this year, David's 14-year-old daughter, Noelle, and his live-in sister, Marissa, are determined to bring the Yuletide spirit back to the family. And with a little luck, also help David find love again via online dating. So when Sophie, a witty musician and customer on David's delivery route, swipes right on him, something magical happens between them. And what did you overall think about this film?
Well, I'll tell you, I am a sucker for handbells, so I did enjoy that aspect of it. And I like Annalyn McCord in these. Like, you know, she did one Hallmark movie and then sort of never came back. And it's weird because, you know, I actually did watch the 90210 reboot. And so I would have thought that either she or Sinead Grimes would have been like the new queen of Hallmark. I would not have expected Jessica Lowndes to come from behind and really like take that spot. This movie overall is, you know, I like her a lot. I found it a little contrived, mainly because like Mario Lopez has entered that stage in his career where he can't stop presenting, you know, like he's now the Access Hollywood guy. He's the guy who keeps popping up on your hotel television every time you turn it on. And so I think sometimes that bleeds into the performance, where it felt like to me he was less playing a character than he was hosting a talk show.
Yeah, some of the acting was not the best in this, and there were things in the script that I really liked. I liked the fact that he makes a totally relatable mistake with forgetting to get the gloves.
Right.
And what parent can't relate? What person can't relate to being like, I totally screwed up. I'm so sorry.
True. We don't get that moment very often in these movies.
Yeah. Like allowing your characters to be flawed. That was such like, most of the time it's just, you're sort of a generic bad man of business, or you're just overworking or things, but this was like such a relatable screw up, I felt like.
Yeah, no, that part definitely works. And you know, there are some fun supporting characters. I thought I thought Annalyn McCord's dad was sort of eccentric and interesting. I liked, I liked the ice cream guy who was all moved to hear the daughter and Annalyn McCord have a conversation about the dead mom, which is, I think, one of the few parts of the movie where the dead mom subplot really kind of rang true. I think, two turtle doves, I've been spoiled now. I want these movies, if they're going to go there, to treat it realistically. And so there's this whole thing where we find out he doesn't really have to do the UPS job, that he's really just doing it because he can't wrap his head around being around for Christmas and dealing with the Christmas stuff because it reminds him too much of her. And I think in a better movie, they would have sold that more, but this one just, it was very like, well, for one thing, you're very clearly telling me and not showing me. And also because Mario Lopez doesn't ever go to a grief place because he's too busy, you know, like getting us ready for the next guest, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's true, but I felt like their relationship was pretty well done as far as father and daughter. And that was really the emphasis on the movie, I thought, was on father daughter versus father,
girlfriend.
You know, and girlfriend. I mean, that was more the emphasis, which I appreciated. And I also appreciated that this film really had dating in it. Like a lot of these movies, it might surprise people to know that they're not really about dating. They're about, most of the time, either with somebody that you work with,
right?
Or somebody that you knew. Yeah, somebody that you knew from high school. So you're not really like dating. And this was kind of fun to see him go on all these different dates. I mean, it's a little unbelievable, the idea that, oh yeah, Mario Lopez is gonna have a hard time finding dates. But
exactly.
Nevertheless, if you accept that he goes on all these dates, and I did think it was really funny, the date where his partner's like, here's my therapist card.
That's maybe my favorite scene, because usually in a movie like this, when somebody's going on a bunch of dates, it's this sort of cavalcade of stereotype goofballs, like the one that director Melissa Joan Hart plays in her cameo here. Uh-huh. But yeah, that last date, it's like, oh no, there's nothing wrong with her. You're the one who's messed up. And so the idea that she's like, I'm going to leave now. Here's my therapist number. I'll check, please. That was a nice touch. I like that a lot.
I
think the dating stratagem, again, that's a clever way to deal with the whole like not having crowd scenes, we're in a pandemic thing, because that's a lot of one-on-one scenes, and so it's easier to get those people, you know, quarantined or whatever. But definitely in the big like performance at the end, that to me felt like there's a lot of empty seats in this auditorium.
Yeah. What did you think of the a cappella thing in the movie?
Well, you know, I like the idea of it. I like the Pitch Perfect, at least the first Pitch Perfect. I wish the rivals weren't so obviously like auto-tuned, and you know, like if they'd had one of them beatboxing instead of this like rhythm track that comes from nowhere. Like that would have maybe landed it more. But I did think like their big song where they were doing Feliz Navidad and they go from the handbells into the vocals. That was actually like, if you're going to make me wait a whole movie for like, this is our big showstopper that we're going to win regionals or whatever. Like that actually kind of felt like it merited the hype. But again, I'm such a sucker for handbells of the holidays like that. If you put me in front of a handbell.
I didn't know that about you.
Oh, yeah. There's sadly, one of the things I'm not doing this year is we make an annual trek down to South Coast Plaza, which is this huge mall in Orange County. Like, it's the kind of mall that has, like, an adjunct second mall that you have to walk a bridge to get to. And they have a Christmas tree that is literally decorated with other Christmas trees. Anyway, if there's a handbell choir, I'm like, I'm not moving until they're done. That is so my thing. So I thought that was a neat thing that we don't see a lot in these movies.
If you ever come out to Sundance, if they ever have Sundance Normal again, I'll take you to the bell choir here.
Okay.
The Tabernacle Choir has a whole bell choir.
All right, it's on.
Part of it's pretty fun. I loved the first Pitch Perfect movie. It was one of my favorite comedies I've ever seen. The second and the third especially, hated
diminishing
so
returns.
Third one, and I do love a cappella. That was a big thing in my at BYU at my college. That's very popular. So it was fun. And I agree. They could have.
There's a joke here about the Mormon poofs, but I won't.
Yeah. I was thinking, Pentatonix, did they co-produce this thing? Like, what's happening here? Because they seemed so much like them.
Very pretty.
And I think it would have been better if it just seemed like a normal high school choir, you know, like.
Yeah, I mean, you can be a really good high school choir and be intimidating to these folks who are being coached by a literal coach, you know. If I recall correctly, this one was made pretty early in the epidemiologists argue whether there's been a post first wave. Anyway, this was made like in the summer, like when nobody was doing anything and suddenly like, no, we're doing this one, you know? And so I guess they had to make the best out of what they could get their hands on.
So this is the second one that Lifetime has done this season with, I guess you might say, Latinx kind of feeling to it. I don't know. With Christmas Yule blog, the big thing seems to be, well, let's make tamales.
Yes.
instead of cookies.
I appreciate the specificity. Some of it felt a little, you know, wedged in, like, let's talk about pozole and, you know, luminarias. And as a, you know, my parents were born in Spain and not Mexico, but definitely as, you know, I grew up in a bilingual household. I don't think the actors always kind of nail the way that people transition back and forth from English to Spanish in the course of a sentence. And so like, there are certain words that, yes, you are going to like really pronounce in that Spanish way, even if you're speaking English. But if I'm speaking a sentence in English and the last word is piñata, I'm going to say piñata and not piñata, but that's just me. I other people may take it their own way, but when I'm watching these, I feel very consciously that, okay, they're really selling this whole, like, what was the first Hallmark movie this year? Jingle Bell Bride, where it was like, Tia, you know, they were really like letting us know immediately, like Spanish, you know? But better that than Invisibilities for sure.
Yeah. If people want a great example of what you're saying, as far as the mixing of the English and the Spanish, this is a feature film, but, there's a movie, Everybody Loves Somebody, from a couple of years. I don't know if you ever saw that, but it's a really good rom-com it makes so much sense because when she's with her family, she's speaking Spanish.
Right.
But when she's with the boyfriend, she's speaking, and it has a fake fiance and some other stuff involved.
Oh, wow.
it's really fun.
Okay.
But she's speaking English at work and with the boyfriend and other things. And she moves in between speaking Spanish and speaking English,
they do it.
You almost never see.
Yeah, well, they do it really well on the new Netflix One Day at a Time, which I guess is now the Pop TV One Day at a Time. Like, they very smoothly do that thing of the way that bilingual people talk to each other. And, you know, like, you lean into the Spanish with, you know, with the grandmother, but you lean into the English with the kids, but you're still going to throw in this word or that word that you either can't translate or it sounds better in the other language or whatever. But it's hard to do it and make it sound organic. And it wasn't always organic in this movie. But again, I appreciate the effort, and I'm glad that they're trying to reach out. I'm so glad that Lifetime's giving us an Asian American film this year, because you know, again, I feel like me and the Bubbly Sesh and a couple of people are, it's our ongoing crusade of making Cardi Wong a romantic lead. You know,
yes, so. they had a trailer promo for that and for the Christmas setup during Feliz Navidad. I was just like, yay! So excited. So overall, I enjoyed this. It was cute. It has its flaws, but it was fun for me. So I would give this one, Feliz Navidad, I'd give it a 3.75.
Okay. I'll say like a 2.8. I think there is some fun stuff. I wish they had given us a more compelling male lead, but I do like a lot of the ambience, love the handbells, and I liked there's some ideas here. It was better than I feared it might be.
Yeah, well, let us know if you're listening what you think of these films. We'd really love to hear in the comment section or on Twitter. That would be great. And Alonzo, how can people find you and all of your podcasts and all of your content?
Ah, well, let's see. Probably the easiest thing is to follow me on Twitter at @aduraldi, @aduraldi. I post links to other stuff, but my other shows are also on Twitter at @linoleumcast, @bfastallday. At Who Shot Ya Pod and at Film and Movie Pod. And then you read my stuff at therap.com, therap. And my book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, is available on Amazon as a tangible book or a Kindle and at other places where you get books.
Great. And we'll have all that information in the description so you can all check it out. And you can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. So check that out. And make sure you're following the podcast at Hallmarkies Pod and Hallmarkies Podcast all over social media. And if you are listening on iTunes, please leave your ratings and reviews. It helps us so much. And leave them for Alonso's podcast too.
Thanks. And support Rachel's Patreon.
Yes, please. We have a really awesome watch along coming up with we're going to watch A Heavenly Christmas with author screenwriter Greg McBride. Cool. And he is hilarious and the best, and so that's going to be really that's a Hallmark Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. So that'll be really, really fun. And so check that out. And we also have our merch store, which has tons of fun festive designs, so please take a look at that. And thanks so much, Alonzo. We really appreciate it. It's always so great to talk with you, and hope you
thanks
have a very
me.
Very Merry Christmas.
Same to you. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.